It's Central Time. I'm Mike Arnold, filling in for Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Gene Purcell. I'm here today for Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yesterday afternoon, the world learned that a man regarded as one of the greatest leaders in modern history had passed away. Nelson Mandela was known for his relentless commitment to peace and reconciliation, and he showed grace as he helped transform an apartheid nation of minority white rule into a modern democracy, an accomplishment that few thought would be the peaceful transition it was. Nelson Mandela was 95.
As South Africa and the world reflect on the loss of a man who was seen as a moral compass, questions arise over the future of South African politics and Mandela's effect on other African leaders. Yesterday in Central Time, we discussed Mandela's legacy and got your reactions to the news of his passing. Today, we'd like to take a step back and take a look at one of the defining periods of his life.
In 1964, Nelson Mandela was found guilty of sabotage, a crime punishable by death. And instead of the death penalty, he was sent to Robben Island for life imprisonment. He stayed in prison for 27 years. While many may have lost hope, Mandela stayed devoted to his cause. And after he was released in 1982, he became South Africa's first post-apartheid president. Well, here to discuss Mandela's sentence on Robben Island is Ken Brown. He's the professor of law at University of North Carolina Law School and the author of Saving Nelson Mandela. Thank you for joining us.
Nice to be with you. Thank you.
Could you tell us a little bit about the events leading up to Mandela's trial for sabotage?
Well, he had been arrested in 1962. He had gone underground. He had been up through Africa talking to other African leaders and, frankly, getting some military training. He came back to South Africa and was working undercover with his group, Umkhonto Wesizwe, which was the spear of the nation, the armed wing of the ANC and the South African Communist Party. He had gone into hiding, and somehow he was betrayed and arrested on the road just outside of Durban.
And so he was arrested in 1962 for something
else. He was arrested in 62. He was put on trial. He was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment at that point for leaving the country without a passport and for inciting an illegal strike. He was sent to Robben Island, while he was on Robben Island, there was a raid at the headquarters of Umkhonto Wesizwe, which was a farmhouse just outside of Johannesburg, in which a number of the leaders were arrested and some 200 documents were found. Some of those documents were authored by Mandela. Some were in his handwriting with plans for sabotage and plans for recruiting militants to be trained abroad. The leadership was charged. Mandela was brought back to Johannesburg, back to eventually to Pretoria to be tried with the others on charges of sabotage, which carried the death penalty.
So, but he didn't get the death penalty.
Get the death penalty.
So, what's the deal with that?
A remarkable turn of events. When he was charged, when the trial began in October of 1963, I think the conventional wisdom, both in South Africa and abroad, that he would be executed along with the other principal leaders.
Mm-hmm.
During the course of the trial, a number of things happened. There were some brilliant legal advocacy by his defense team, led by the outstanding Afrikaner lawyer, Bram Fischer, and others. There was some bad advocacy on the part of the prosecution, which irritated the judge. I think that the government may have lost interest in executing him. There were some subtle pressures put on the government at that point. The Americans and the British were not particularly upfront in defending Mandela, but they let it be known that while they probably had no objection to his imprisonment, they didn't want him executed. So there are a number of factors that combine to the sentence of life for he and most of the others. There were two defendants that were acquitted.
And so basically, South Africa was kind of thinking about its position in the world then a little bit.
Well, it's quite possible that there were no statement on the part of the government from which you could find that out, but I've certainly read the correspondence from the American Embassy and from the British Foreign Office, and I think that they felt that South Africa was at least somewhat concerned about their place in the world. They at least cared what the British and the Americans thought about them.
So could you tell us about Robben Island, where he was sent?
Well, Robben Island was a general prison when he was first sent there. That is, there were both political prisoners and there were people charged with actual crimes. That was for the first few years. I think the government assumed that the criminals would keep the political prisoners under control. Actually, just the opposite happened. The political prisoners recruited the criminals, and they eventually moved the other people out, and it would simply became a prison for political prisoners. But it was a very harsh place. There was harsh labor in a rock quarry just outside the prison. The prisoners were brought there every day. During the early years, there was not much ability for the prisoners to even to talk to one another except while they were working.
So in an environment like that, how did Nelson Mandela stay connected and engaged?
Well,
in politics?
There was some contact, and the prisoners managed to communicate with each other. There were limited visits from the outside world, but there were some visits. Some of the lawyers were able to come in. Some family members were able to come in, but it was pretty minimal, at least for the first, I'd estimate, 10 years. After that, by the mid-70s, things loosened up a little bit. They were permitted at least to get books. They were not often permitted to get current newspapers, but they could get books, they could study, they could take degrees, and there were lots of interaction at that point. And Robben Island became pretty much like a mini university for very bright political prisoners, and much of the theory of what the new South Africa would be like was formed by the people who were there. It became Robben Island University, as some of the people who were there have referred to it. A friend of mine was on the island for 10 years from the time he was in he was 15 till 25, and did all of his education there.
That whole experience on Robben Island has had an impact on South Africa moving forward because of what people learned there.
I think that's right. I think even now politically in South Africa there are some distinction made between the group of people who got their education at Robben Island and the group who were in exile. It's just a somewhat different way of looking at it, different factions of the ANC.
So Nelson Mandela was in prison for 27 years. What was it like when he was released from prison in South Africa?
Well, it was a remarkable moment. He actually, the last couple of years of his imprisonment were very different, certainly from the early years. He was in a private house on the outskirts of a prison. He was still confined, but he had frequent visitors. He had visitors from the government. He had visitors from the ANC. He had visitors from his lawyers, and he had begun at that point to exert leadership. So his involvement began in a very serious way a couple of years before. His actual release was a symbolic moment. I think for those of us who were involved at that time, and I was a visitor, but I was I was there frequently, and that was the moment at which we thought, my God, this is going to happen. This is going to change. And I think there was a general feeling in South Africa, at least among the anti-apartheid people, that finally things were going to get better. We didn't know how long, we didn't know how violent, we didn't know exactly what nature it would take. And some of the reason, a good deal of the reason why it happened and happened in a less violent than everyone thought way was because of Mandela's leadership.
Well, Ken Brown, thanks so much for your time.
Okay, well, thank you for having me.
Ken Brown's a professor of law at the University of North Carolina Law School and the author of Saving Nelson Mandela. Thanks for joining us.